I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Confronting ISIS is airing tonight on Frontline, 8 o'clock Central here in the state of Wisconsin, and Martin Smith is with us. He's been here before. Martin has been reporting on the rise of ISIS for several years now. For this documentary, he traveled throughout the Middle East this past January and February, going to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, and Turkey to explain how all the people in those places and leadership sees the fight, how they think the war is going. Martin has been doing remarkable work in the Middle East and other places of the world for a number of years now. Since the 2003 invasion of Iraq, he's covered the conflict for Frontline with a series of films, including Truth, War, and Consequences, also Beyond Baghdad, Private Warriors, Gangs of Iraq, and we talked to him last about the rise of ISIS just a little while ago. He has covered the world in his 40 years of producing and reporting Revolution in Central America, Fall of Communism in Russia, the rise of Al-Qaeda, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the inside story of the global financial meltdown, and many other documentaries. And we're delighted to have him with us again. It's a two-hour documentary, and it covers a lot of important territory. There are complicated situations in all of these countries, so he will help us understand what's going on, where we have failed, where we might be successful. I'm not sure. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we like to read your comments, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hello, Martin. Thanks for being with us again. How are you?
I'm good, Kathleen.
Good.
Thank you for that introduction. I feel tired now after you listing all those documents.
But great
to be back.
You must be tired, Martin. Just after the last go-around, you must be tired. You know, I didn't know where to start, but I think I want to start with Saudi Arabia, because I wonder if we had support, if they were a true ally of ours, and if their political situation was a little different, if we might be seeing something different in the Middle East. You, in the film, talk about ISIS recruiting more young men from Saudi Arabia than any other state. And their priority, even though they've been attacked by ISIS, is not getting rid of ISIS. It's the existential threat from Iran. Can you talk about why more people are going to ISIS from Saudi Arabia, and why they're seeing Iran as the biggest deal for them right now?
Okay. So, I mean, it is a very schizophrenic state, Saudi Arabia. On the one hand, there are some, at least in the Saudi context, you might call them progressives, people who want to bring the country out of its embrace of extremist forms of an extremist form of Islam, but it is the country is also the birthplace of that very that Wahhabism, extreme form of Islam, from which ISIS springs, and so they are at once the birthplace of this kind of ultra, almost medieval form of Islam, and. On the other hand, they are signed up and have run bombing sorties and whatnot, and cooperating with the United States and its anti-ISIS coalition. Until about March or so of 2015, when a war broke out in Yemen that they largely saw as an intervention on the part of Iran into Yemen on their southern border, they see Iran and they're not wrong. I mean, since the founding of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Ayatollah Khomeini declared that the monarchies of the Gulf had to go, and he pointed at the Saudi monarchy and declared that they had to be overthrown. He declared that they were the legitimate rulers, the leaders of the Islamic world, not Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's whole sort of raison d'etre is that they are the land of the two, the land of the mosques and the center of Islam. So they've been challenged by Iran, and Iran has proxy forces in various places throughout the region, including Syria and Iraq and increasingly in Yemen. So the Saudis see that as a much bigger threat to them than they see ISIS. And ISIS, on the one hand, is a Sunni group, and the Saudis are Sunni. The Iranians are Shia. So they sort of, some Saudis line up with ISIS. They see it as being sort of the shock troops, if you will, of the Sunni cause.
Mm-hmm. They had this huge, and I think you were there for this huge military display within the last few months. What was that for?
Well, that was saber-rattling for Iran. That was to say, you know, we're here, we've got a lot of weapons, you know, don't meddle with us, don't mess. It came out of an announcement that they were going to form their own coalition to fight, quote-unquote, terrorism. And so they organized other countries in the Sunni world to join them, and they staged this huge military exercise on their northern border up near Iraq, and they called it Northern Thunder. And they just had an enormous amount of weaponry on display, and helicopters and jets flying overhead, and thousands of soldiers, tanks, armored vehicles of one type or another. A huge military exercise. You can see it in the film. It's quite remarkable.
Yes, it is.
So that is their number one. That's their agenda, is really to stare down Iran.
Mm-hmm. Do we really need them? Are they an important force in regional actors trying to take on ISIS? And without them, we're not likely to see success? Or can we... Well, we'll talk about how we're not being real successful in a lot of areas, but can we do all of this without their active support?
The administration sees them as very important, not so much for their military contribution to the fight, not so much for them flying, you know, bombing sorties over Syria. They did a little bit of that in the beginning. They say they're doing more now, but they don't allow you to see any statistics, nor does the Pentagon share any information. And since the Pentagon coordinates all this, they know, and there's some reason that they don't share the truth with the public.
Mm-hmm.
But the administration does feel that they play a huge role in what they call counter-messaging, which is to police their schools, police their mosques, and try to cut down on the amount of sort of virulent preaching and teaching of Wahhabism, which declares that, at least according to more moderate Muslims, the Wahhabis are preaching that Jews, Christians, and even non-Wahhabi Muslims should really be exterminated. And so they want this fuels ISIS. I mean, this is the message of ISIS.
Right.
And it's taught it's preached in mosques in Saudi Arabia and taught in some schools. And so the administration has tried very hard, some say not hard enough, to try to get the Saudis to really go into these institutions in their country and tamp down that message.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move to Syria. The thing that's amazing about the documentary is all these different forces at work. It is complicated, and it just, you finish the film and you think, it's complicated and it's a mess. It's hard to figure out a way out of this morass. But in Syria, now you've got the Russians bombing. We thought evidently they were going to help us fight ISIS. You've got the Kurds, who are evidently a very effective force fighting, but the Turks don't like this because they don't like the Kurds very much. And you've got the United States. Tell us about this program. This was phenomenal, and the congressional testimony on the film was incredible. This train and equip program, which was a dismal failure. I don't know how we thought it was going to work, but what a failure this one was.
Yeah, that was really
something. Oh, brother. Yeah.
I mean, the president decides that he's not going to put American troops on the ground in Syria because he's got elected, saying, that's not what I was elected for. I'm not going to get us, our men and women, involved in another messy war in the Middle East. So we have to look around and say, who are we going to have? Who's going to carry the fight to ISIS for us? Who are going to be our boots on the ground? And so he decides to put together a proxy force, a trained force of Syrian Arabs that we train in Jordan, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. But the program doesn't go very well from the very get-go, because they're recruiting Syrians who've been fighting Assad, the government, the regime of Syria. And they're being asked to leave their homes, their villages, and come out, leave their families behind, come out, and train to fight ISIS, which is not their priority. Their priority is to continue to fight Assad. That's mm-hmm. who's attacking them. And so you don't get a lot of buy-in from these guys, and the program starts to, you know, sort of shrink in terms of numbers. And finally, they've got, I don't know, a handful of 50 or so that they're going to send back in after some training. And it's even hard to imagine what 50 is going to do against 30,000 ISIS fighters. So, but anyway, maybe they can call in some airstrikes, you know, with locating. You know, maybe there's some usefulness there. But it turns out that they come back in. Many of them join another force. Many of them don't even cross the border, and others are captured or killed. And you get down to a hearing on Capitol Hill in which the CENTCOM commander, General Lloyd Austin, is asked how many are left.
No.
And sheepishly and painfully, this poor man reaches for the button on the microphone and says, it's a small number, 4 or 5.
I know. I stopped the tape at that point. I just went, I was by myself with my dog, and I said to myself, or to the dog, actually, 4 or 5, incredible.
Yeah, what did the dog say?
He was asleep.
Yeah, well, he was smart. But, you know, if you figure we spent $500 million on that program, that means each of those fighters cost between $500 million on that program. Each fighter was trained up at the cost of $100 to
$125 million. Oh, my gosh. Well, let's talk about the Kurds in Syria and talk about this fight to get Kobani, and eventually we do. It's a long road getting there, and I guess it's an important victory to defeat ISIS there. But tell me about, it's a complicated situation here, too, because Turkey doesn't like this very much, who we're supporting, but evidently they seem to be, are they the best fighters against ISIS?
They have been. The Peshmerga in northern Iraq have been very effective, at least when they are assisted by U.S. air power. And on the ground in northern Syria, you have a group called, goes by the name the YPG. That group of Kurds is, at least they're willing to fight, unlike the Iraqi army, which collapsed back in 2014 and ran. The Kurds have put up a fight. But they were losing in Kobani. They weren't able to match the superior force that ISIS had mustered there. ISIS was trying to seize a key border crossing. So they're losing, and we look over there and say to Turkey, who has signed on to the anti-ISIS coalition, you say, hey, come on, guys, we need your help. You're a NATO ally. You're part of this anti-ISIS coalition. And the Turks say, we want nothing to do with the Kurds. Why? Because for decades, the Kurds Turkey, under the banner of the Kurdistan Workers Party, have run a brutal war against the Turkish government, and they are a separatist or they're a separatist organization. They want Kurdish autonomy. They want a Kurdish state. So they say they're not going to help the Kurdish brothers and sisters fighting on the other side of the border, and we. You know, we get very. This is right after the president has finally declared that we're going to go degrade and destroy ISIS, that we're engaged in this battle with Turkey over whether they're going to really help us or not.
Mm-hmm. You try to go to Erdogan's massive new palace, as you call it, and he doesn't want to be interviewed by you, but you speak with his foreign policy advisor. Why do you make special mention of the fact that he has this, and it is indeed quite massive, this massive new palace, and how important is our relationship, and what is our changing relationship with Erdogan?
Well, I just point point out, I mean, it's quite controversial, this palace. It was not even built for President Erdogan. It was built for the prime minister and to have offices there. And he kind of just moved in and took it over. Mm. It's called, it's the Turks, many of them call it the controversial palace, because there was so much controversy over whether or not Erdogan even had the right to take it over. And it's an enormous structure. So we make mention of that. It's important to the United States that Turkey be on board. They weren't even letting American warplanes fly out of U.S. bases inside Turkey during the Battle of Kobani, which made it necessary for them to fly from aircraft carriers or from bases far, far away, hours away.
Mm-hmm. So did it change Erdogan's mind when ISIS was defeated in Kobani?
It changed his mind a little bit before that. It changed his mind when he saw how determined the Americans were to support the Kurds. And when we organized an airdrop of relief, medicine, and ammunition and weapons to the Kurds of Kobani, then the government of Erdogan, which was, you know, taken by surprise by this decision by Obama, decided to allow some Peshmerga from northern Iraq come to help their Kurdish brothers and sisters in Syria. But it's almost as if everywhere you turn in this region, you trip across either an ethnic or sectarian fault.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that is sort of promoted during our campaign season that, you know, it's not going to be hard to defeat ISIS, you have to get tough, you know, one thing or another, it's a myth. It's not easy, because everywhere you turn, you end up in a conflict with the people you thought were your friends.
Exactly. And we haven't even gotten to Iraq yet, which we will do in just a moment. Martin Smith is our guest this hour. Tonight, his documentary is Frontline. It's a very important film. There aren't many people who are doing the kind of brave reporting that he is doing. He's been reporting on ISIS for several years now, and just in the past couple months, traveled to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, and Turkey to see what in the world is going on and whether or not the fight against ISIS has been successful in any way. And you leave the film thinking, I don't know what the new strategy should be, and maybe Martin does from his informed perspective, but it just looks like a morass. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Martin Smith is with us now as we have entered about the third year of a fight against ISIS. How's it going is what we're talking about this hour, and he went to the Middle East to find out. Let's take a few phone calls before we move into a discussion of Iraq. Kenneth in Janesville, hi.
Hello. I don't understand why we cannot even try to solve this problem of the Kurds not having a country. I mean, after World War One, they were left without a country. I mean, Churchill, with his brandy, you know, drew the lines, and they were left out without a country right after World War One, and even to right now, they're fighting everybody. I mean, the Turks, ISIS, the Syrians, Iraqis, and they're terrorists. Just to have a piece of their own there.
Martin,
you ask a very good question. I mean, this is one of the problems that needs to be addressed if we're going to settle. If this region is going to settle, in fact, in northern Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, in many ways, operates like an autonomous republic. When you go there, you fly there. From Baghdad, you have to go through passport control at the airport when you land in the capital, Erbil, and it feels very much like a different country. They've got oil money, and they've got there's some sense of order. But you're right. Until the problem of the Kurds can be addressed, it's one of many problems in the region that needs to be addressed before you're going to, heal the ethnic wound that is left. And the question I have is, what do the Kurds, who have spilled lots of blood fighting ISIS on behalf of the United States, what do they get out of this in the end? And that's an open question. And I couldn't get a good answer out of anybody in Washington and the administration about that.
Why are they doing it? Why are they fighting then?
Well, they're fighting for their own safety. I mean, they're defending themselves, but they're also, they recognize that they benefit from having a strong relationship with the United States, and they hope that they will be defended by the United States for the sacrifices they have made. And they've made tremendous sacrifices. They've lost many men and women. Both men and women fight on the front lines for them. But it's yet to be determined what they're going to get out of this in the end.
Kenneth, thanks so much for your call. Brian in Toma. Hi, Brian.
Yeah, I was calling in regards to the statement where you said you're fighting with what you think are your friends at one point, and then they become your enemy. And basically, these people have Muslim heritage, and I just thought I was wondering about how Hillary says that she's going to bring in 1 million Muslims in her first term. Is that not, does that not raise some concern when you don't really know where they stand on their beliefs or how seriously they take their Muslim heritage? Is this not?
She's talking about bringing in Syrian refugees, which is another part of the documentary. You want to comment on this, Martin?
Well, I don't subscribe to the idea that they turn on us because they are Muslim, which I think is being implied here. There has been infiltration by ISIS in some of the refugee flows into Europe. We haven't seen direct ISIS activity in the United States, however. We've seen ISIS-inspired attacks, but that has nothing to do with refugee flows. I just don't, we are fighting in a region where there are many different peoples of different religions and sects of religion and ethnic identities, and that is more the problem than whether or not this or that person is a Muslim. You've got a lot of Muslim on Muslim violence there. They're not turning on us because we are not Muslim.
And you make mention there are two different figures given at one point in the film. It's 9 million Syrian refugees.
It's four million. That is a piece of radio. We were illustrating some of the hyperbole.
Oh.
But it is a large number, and there's 9 million people displaced.
Wow.
They haven't necessarily fled the country. There's 4 million, 5 million or so, somewhere in there, that have fled Syria, and they have gone to refugee camps, mostly in Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey. And once those camps were overflowing, they were moving in large numbers into Europe and some into the United States.
Mm-hmm. Let's move to Iraq, where sectarian tension is still there, and really there in many ways. This whole thing is so convoluted. The Iraqi military relying on Iranian-backed Shia militias to confront ISIS. And so the Sunnis are considered, really, it seems by many, to be a part of ISIS. So you've got this destruction of Sunni communities and really a civil war going on.
Yeah, that's what led to the rise of ISIS in the first place, a sense by Sunnis of Iraq that they were disenfranchised, that they were being purged from sharing in the spoils in Baghdad, that they had no sort of, their positions in government were being taken from them, and there was basically a Shia takeover of the government as they saw it. And now, as these, well, first of all, the Iraqi army, which cut and ran after ISIS moved into Fallujah and into Mosul,
mm-hmm.
The Americans have tried to rebuild this Iraqi army, but in the meantime, the void has been filled by these Iranian-backed Shia militias, highly sectarian Shia militias, and they have taken it upon themselves, separate from the government in many cases, to go into communities and fight ISIS, and then to treat a lot of the people. Not every militia does it the same way, but they treat a lot of the people in these places as if they were ISIS collaborators or ISIS supporters. Well, if you were a farmer or a shopkeeper in some part of central Iraq and ISIS moved into your area, because you didn't fight them doesn't mean you were supporting them, or certainly you weren't collaborating with them. But they're seen that way, and there has been some score settling on the part of these Shia militias in terms of blowing these people's houses up or killing them.
Mm-hmm. And so the official position of the Iraqi government is they don't support these militias, but indeed they really do support these militias, or what?
That's a good way to put it. No, I mean, they have what they call the Hashd al-Shaabi, and they say it's sort of under the government's control, but it's not under the government's control. I mean, it's a fiction. They cooperate where they can. The government tries to work with these militia, but these are very powerful militias that have money from Iran. They have advisors from Iran, and they are not fully controlled by the Prime Minister of Iraq. So it's like a government. It's like an army within the state that isn't controlled fully by the state.
You asked the Prime Minister, didn't you? Do you have control of the militia forces? His answer?
His answer was, well, we don't. He just sort of evaded. He said, well, we don't call them militias. We call them civilians helping us fight. And he sees them as being somehow in cooperation with his government. But there's too many cases where that hasn't been the case. The Americans have refused to fight or provide air support to these militias, and has said to the government of Iraq, as long as you're going to allow these militia to spearhead a battle, we're not going to provide air support. And there's the case that we profile in the program of Tikrit, in central Iraq, a former hometown of Saddam Hussein, a Sunni town, where these militias try to go in with Iranian help, and the battle stalls. ISIS is too strong for them. So finally, the government says, we need your help. And they turn to the Americans. They say, we need your help. And the Americans say, well, as long as you get the militias agree to stand down, we'll provide help. And that's how that battle was won.
Mm. And you show this picture of Baghdad where there are all these pictures of war heroes, but no Sunni leaders.
Yeah, it's really quite striking.
Yes.
When you drive through Baghdad and you see poster after poster put up by militia groups, a body the Prime Minister has publicly called for these posters to be taken down, and nobody's obeyed that request. So they stay there. And there are no posters anywhere that you can find of Sunni leaders. So, you know, it's clear when you're in Baghdad that the Shia militia are really running the show.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Gary in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Gary.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
One of the main problems, probably the primary problem for all of this conflict, is that all of these groups that you're talking about are basically patriarchal male systems. The primary belief of every patriarchal male system is that their belief system is the only right system in the world. Saudi Arabia is patriarchal. Turkey's patriarchal. Putin is patriarchal. Syria's Assad is a patriarchal system. So you have ISIS is a patriarchal male system. So what you have is all kinds of different patriarchal male systems believing that they have the only system that's right in the world, and they're all fighting each other.
Martin.
Well, it indeed is a crowded neighborhood with lots of various groups with various self-interests, and a tribal custom is that when someone is killed from one tribe, there has to be retribution. There has to be. There can't be just a meeting of and some kind of money paid or somebody being tried and put in jail. No, there has to be a tit for tat killing. I haven't heard this sort of analysis of it, that it's patriarchal. Certainly there are bullies of all kinds roaming our planet, unfortunately. And I wouldn't just say it's in the Middle East. There are people who take it upon themselves or believe that their way of being is superior to the next. So it is that it's a very crowded neighborhood, in my view, with all these various sects and ethnic groups living so closely together. Mm-hmm. And it was one thing when it took you many days to run, to walk or take your camel from Baghdad to Damascus. But in the modern era, with modern weapons and modern communications, you've just accelerated everything and smooshed everybody together in a way that makes it very difficult for people to work out their boundaries, their differences, and to make peace.
Martin Smith is our guest this hour. He's the person who did the reporting, an important reporting it is, from the Middle East, where he was just a couple months ago. He's been going there for many, many years, but it's from Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, and Turkey to look at confronting ISIS. It's the name of tonight's Frontline documentary. It airs at 6 p.m. tonight, and Martin is with us to talk about his work and that part of the world. Welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655. If you hear it once, you've heard it many times. Well, we've got this wonderful ally in Jordan, and yet your documentary looks at the downing of a Jordanian pilot and what happened as a result of that made people in Jordan question how much they wanted to be a part of a group that's going to confront ISIS, Martin.
Right. So that was another test of the coalition, and an interesting one. When the Jordanian pilot, who, if people listening can remember, he was the fellow who was then doused with gasoline, put in a cave, burned to death by ISIS, and it was filmed in a kind of a Hollywood blockbuster fashion. And then shown on the streets of their capital, Raqqa, to children. It was just a horrendous event. But what we're looking at there is within these societies, Saudi Arabia and Jordan, there's support for ISIS. There are people who think ISIS is a right and just Sunni cause, fighting a right and just Sunni cause. And so when... And then moderates within the country even felt that when the pilot was shot down and before the burning even took place, did they really want to be involved in this coalition? Wasn't it just going to stir up trouble within their borders? So they had real doubts about whether or not they wanted to sign on for the coalition to begin with. Then this happens. Other countries, such as the UAE, ground their airplanes because they felt that there was too much risk if these planes were going to go down and there was no search and rescue operation that could effectively get the pilots out. They weren't so sure they wanted to fly. So it challenged the Jordanians and other countries. But this is a case where, in the end of the day, with the brutality that ISIS in the burning, all the
horrible,
horrendous event, the Jordanians actually jumped in and said, that's enough. We don't, you know, we're going in. We're going in and we're going to hit them even harder. So they did. So it tested them and they passed that test. But then immediately, within a month, there was a war that broke out in Yemen. And Saudi Arabia, other Gulf states, and even Jordan really reduced the amount of contribution they were making to the anti-ISIS coalition and contributed to the war in Yemen against Houthi rebels there who have received some support from Iran. So, once again, they chose to look at Iran as the threat rather than at ISIS.
Right. Let's go to Jimmy in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Afternoon. Yeah, I know that our country and our allies have made mistakes in that region ever, probably over 100 years ago, and the drawing of the lines after World War One, and the support for Israel. And so, I mean, that's, I don't consider that a mistake, but it has caused issues there. But in the end, at some point, these societies in the Middle East have to decide that they're going to settle their differences politically instead of by violence. Until they learn that, I don't know how many people got to die until they figure that out. I mean, what can be done?
That is in some way very similar to the conclusion that I hear voiced inside the White House. That we cannot impose solutions militarily from the outside, that these societies have to work on these problems themselves, and there have to be the kind of social and political changes made internally before we're going to see a peace in the Middle East. So that is, in fact, why the president has been so reluctant to get too directly involved. On the other hand, I should say in this conversation that ISIS is a military threat or is a terrorist threat, and they have applied increasing pressure on them. I say they, I mean the administration. And with the failure of our coalition partners to carry their weight, the United States has put more resources into the battle, and they are making progress. They have pushed ISIS out of many towns and cities that they once occupied. And as you may know from reading the news now, the battle to retake Mosul in Iraq isn't far off.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean the defeat of ISIS. It doesn't mean that they will be neutered as a terrorist organization. They'll still be a significant threat. The problem, as I see it, is what your caller is talking about. It's that after we defeat ISIS militarily, after we push them out of all these towns and cities in Iraq and maybe have a strategy in Syria, although that's more difficult, you've still got to address all the conditions that led to the rise of ISIS in the first place, sectarianism,
right.
All these divisions, and until the war in Syria comes to a halt, it's very hard to see that ISIS will be fully defeated, and their ideology will survive because they are supported by those in the Gulf countries who see them as a shock troops of a just Sunni cause.
Yeah. Can you, because I know you've seen, I've never really seen any of these other than bits and pieces, but can you talk about the use of video, the recruiting tools, there are little snippets of those on the documentary tonight, and how they're being used effectively, and just what happens on the other end. Because I don't quite get it when people see one of these and say, "Oh, what a worthy cause! I'm leaving France, I'm leaving wherever, and I'm going to fight with ISIS."
Well, there's a lot of different reasons for why people do join up. Some people see this as a just cause. They look at what Bashar al-Assad and his regime in Syria is doing to people, and they somehow respond to a message that's put out there by ISIS that you should come here and help fight this bloodthirsty dictator.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the pitches. Assad provides a cause for ISIS in that fashion. In the region, they see the horrendous, hundreds of thousands of people being killed in Syria, and again, they see this as a just cause. I went to a Saudi prison. It's not in the film because nobody really wanted to be on camera, But I did talk to ISIS and Al-Qaeda fighters in there and why they joined. And it's very much, they saw it as a just cause. They may not have been exposed to all the violence that is seen in the propaganda tapes that we're familiar with. I mean, those are done to scare their enemies. But they have other recruitment videos that are making a really good case why they should come and fight in Syria, or why they should be why they should come to Iraq and fight against the government, the Shia-led government of Iraq. So, you know, they get fooled. There's those that have joined and then immediately think, oh my God, I didn't know what I was getting into.
Martin Smith is our guest. We'll talk more about Syria in just a moment. Confronting ISIS, his documentary, it's Frontline tonight, and it's on PBS at 8 o'clock. Martin has been reporting on the Middle East for a long time and has done a number of award-winning documentaries on Al-Qaeda and ISIS and the war in Iraq, and the list goes on. He's been doing documentaries for a number of years now. Confronting ISIS tonight, and this is the direct result of a great deal of time he spent on the ground just recently in Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, and Turkey to look at how the fight against ISIS is going and how complicated it is and how those we would like to have on our side aren't given all that we would like for them to give. 800-486-8655. More phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tom and Nelson, the next caller for you, Martin. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you.
Sure, Tom.
The question is, I know that Germany has taken in hundreds of thousands of refugees, but what are the Europeans, or, for instance, England and France and Germany and so on, doing to help on the ground with the military battle that's going on?
I can't answer that very specifically because my focus was on the regional allies, and for just in 2 hours it was enough to handle. And
I
was most interested in that aspect of it. But those countries are involved, and I just can't tell you relatively who's doing more. I know that the English and the French are participating in the bombing campaign against ISIS targets. I just don't know the breakdown, but they are involved.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for the call. Let's talk about Russia for a moment. What do they want in Syria?
Syria has always been a Russian client state. You go back through the Cold War, Syria was always a country that they had good relations with, and it provides them with a port on the Mediterranean. And so I was there in Syria last year in the regime-controlled areas, and you can go up and down the coast and see Russian ships in there, both in Latakia and Tartus, the cities. So the Russians want to maintain that. They want a foothold in that part of the world. And Syria has traditionally been it, and they've made it clear that they're siding with Assad, that they want to maintain that relationship.
And did we ever seriously think that they would help in the fight against ISIS?
Yeah, we did, actually.
We really did.
I guess we did. I mean, I sat down with Secretary of Defense Carter, and he recounted to me how the Russians had explained to him that they were going to come in, and this was in September of 2015, and help fight ISIS. And there's reason to believe that they would want to fight ISIS because they have on their southern flank a large problem with Islamic extremists in some of the southern zones of Russia, and certainly in the stands. So there was reason to believe they would, and as I said to him in the documentary, which you can see tonight, I said, I guess they lied to you, and he says, yeah, basically.
Hmm. So are there, it's just hard to understand what's going on in the ground in Syria. Are there any effective forces? Are those who are fighting Assad also fighting ISIS? Who's fighting ISIS? Who's fighting effectively Assad? Does Assad have to go before any of this can be worked out? It just seems enormously complicated, Martin.
It is enormously complicated. There have been times, and there were before the Russians entered, back when I was in Syria in the summer of 2015, there was a sense that some of the rebel groups were making real gains. These would be, some of them are more jihadist in nature, more fundamentalist in nature. Some of them are more secular in nature. But they were making real gains and pushing into the towards the coastline, the real stronghold of Bashar al-Assad's forces. And so that's when the Russians entered the fight. And since then, those forces are struggling to hold on to Aleppo, which Assad and the Russians seem determined to pummel everybody in that city, to pummel it flat and kill everybody in order to save it, to destroy it in order to prevent it from remaining in the hands of the rebels. ISIS sort of sits this one out. ISIS is involved. They've even got some forces down in the south, even further south than Damascus. And when I was in Damascus, they had a small suburban area there that they were controlling. But basically, they're sitting out the fight against Assad, and they're able to hold on to territory and take advantage of the chaos of the war. But they're not really combatants. Sometimes they are, but for the most part, they are not.
Tom in Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
Yes, I saw Vladimir Putin interviewed by Charlie Rose. Vladimir Putin made it very clear that he was defending Syria. He did not want to see the regime change because things would turn out like Libya. And so he is fighting or was going to fight ISIS, but he won't fight against Assad. So we're cooperating with Russia on one aspect and against them on another. He is very clear about his objective.
Yeah, he's very clear in his words that he is there to defend Assad, and he has been defending Assad, and that he's fighting ISIS. And yes, there are times when the Russians do bomb ISIS targets, but they're not focused solely on ISIS. They're also fighting the Russians have been bombing the forces that the U.S. CIA has supported, just to add another layer of complexity to this. The Russians have come in and bombed U.S.-supported rebels because they're fighting anybody that is against Assad.
Thanks for the call. Martin, I got to ask this. I don't know what the answer is, but you've been there plenty, and you've seen all these different countries. Is there something we should be doing that we're not doing?
I think we're doing a lot that we should be doing, frankly. I think that there is progress being made in Iraq, certainly. But I think what you really have to keep your eye on is whether or not there will be adequate follow-up or will we just walk away once ISIS is run out of Mosul. Will there really be efforts made diplomatically to negotiate settlements between the Kurds, the Sunnis, and Shia within that country? And will there be the sort of rebuilding of the country to help it get on its feet? In Syria, I think we've got to figure out a way to bring Assad to the negotiating table, and that's going to require negotiating much more aggressively with the Russians. Now, I do think that John Kerry has been trying to do that, but every time an American Secretary of State or somebody in the White House or the Pentagon thinks they have an agreement with the Russians, it seems they get double-crossed. So that's an effort that has to keep going forward, but it's been discouraging, I have to say, in Syria.
Mm-hmm. Martin, thank you very much for being with us, and thanks for doing the documentary. There aren't many people who would go where you've been and let us know what you've seen. Thank you.
Okay. Kathleen, thank you very much.
Martin Smith, Martin's documentary Confronting ISIS appears tonight on Frontline on PBS. It's on at 8 o'clock Central Time. He's done all kinds of work reporting from the Middle East. He actually, since the 2003 invasion of Iraq, he's covered the conflict for Frontline with a series of films. And he has been reporting on the rise of ISIS for almost 3 years now, since ISIS has been on the rise. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. Thanks for your questions, and thank you for listening. News is coming up from National Public Radio. Hour two of our program, stay tuned for it. We'll be talking about a real fracture in conservative media in this country because of Donald Trump.